across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
At 7:06 on this Friday morning, April 12th. Nice to have you along for what's going to be a very busy hour. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot has our weekend forecast in just seconds. We'll be joined by Max Richman of the Committee to Protect Medicare and Social Security about Senate candidate Eric Hovde's remarks about nursing home voters. Mark Jacobs joins us at the bottom of the hour to review media coverage of the week's events. Dan Schumacher talks about sports as we head into the weekend, a very busy day ahead of us. 7 o'clock temperatures around Wisconsin include 43 here on Lake Wissota, 39 in Hayward. Park Falls is at 40, Wausau 43, Green Bay 46. La Crosse reporting 48 degrees right now, Wisconsin Rapids 44. Oshkosh 46, Madison 46, Waukesha 45, and of course, Robin Tigerton tells us that it's sunny and 43, and he also gives us increasingly large amounts of knowledge about his his life. Last night, he had a Big Mac salad at Blazers in Split Rock. Stock car races kick off at Shawano Speedway tomorrow night. My sister Lori rang my neck and gave me grief about Highway 29 because 29 is my favorite highway and we kid around about area highways. I thought it was because he mentioned how old his sister is for her birthday.
I thought that too. I was like, it actually happened, Pat.
I know. The Facebook's becoming Dear Diary from Rob and we appreciate it. We're here for it.
I just want to know what a Big Mac salad is. I think I know what it is, but it still worries me, Rob.
It does not sound healthy, you know. Who had the real Men of Genius ad thing? Was that a Bud Light?
I think it was a Bud Light, yeah.
The taco salad one was far and away the best. You know, mocking
real
that it's
Man of Genius.
So not a healthy salad. But we digress. Getting back to the weather, which is decidedly going to be spring-like, although not like last year. Last year, record high here in the Chippewa Valley, 89 degrees. We're not getting there today, Brittany, but it's not bad.
No, we're definitely not hitting 89. That's too hot too fast for me right now at this point. Mm-hmm. But today we've got those breezy northwest winds that are going to, of course, keep us a little bit cooler out there today. So highs will be in the 50s across the state. Of course, the further north you are, probably some lower 50s. The further south and west you are, some higher 50s. But the clouds are already clearing. The rain is long gone. We're going to see abundant sunshine all weekend long, and it starts now. So beautiful out there. We will see a frosty overnight as we drop below freezing tonight. But otherwise, we soar into the 60s to some 70s for tomorrow. We'll definitely hit the 70s on Sunday. And it still looks like Monday. A few of us are going to tap into those 80s before we get soaked on Monday night and through early next week. So keep that in mind.
Okay. Well, we will definitely make the most of this weekend.
Perfect.
This is yard work, clean the garage, whatever it is, it's got to get done. No excuses.
Nope, no excuses.
Get it done here.
Okay.
Thanks, Brittany.
All right. Yeah.
Have a great weekend.
You too.
Talk to you on Monday. All right, let's turn our attention to the U.S. Senate race here in Wisconsin and welcome in Max Richman from the National Committee to Protect Medicare and Social Security. Max, good morning. Thanks for being here. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. I'm glad to see you guys are having so much fun up there in Wisconsin.
We love our Fridays. We need to unplug, especially after another busy week like this. Max, we're going to start by playing back one of the audio clips on at least two different occasions. Senate candidate Eric Hovde has made some remarks about helping nursing home residents to vote. Greg's going to play a little bit of what he had to say in one of those interviews.
I'm not going to spend my time talking about 2020. Do I believe the election was stolen? No, but did things happen in that election that were very troublesome? Absolutely. And I can point them out right here in Wisconsin. We had Zuckerbucks come into Democratic cities in a big way to push out, working with cities to push out Democratic votes. We had nursing homes where the sheriff of Racine investigated where you had 100% voting in nursing homes. Well, if you're in a nursing home, you only have 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is in a point to vote.
That's That's still as weird to hear now as it was the first time around. And to hear him, again, just parroting some of the other 2020 nonsense, where much like State Senator Van Wongard yesterday, the quote from him was, "I'm not saying it was stolen. I'm just saying there's these irregularities." Max, you're not here to relitigate 2020, but to talk about, you know, nursing home residents and their rights and their expectations, because something like, you know, the preservation of Medicare and Social Security is a very real issue this year, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you know, when I heard that statement, I thought of the expression, if someone tells you who they are, believe them, right? And Eric Hovde has told us a number of times who he is, and we should believe him. This is the same candidate who, in the past, when he was asked about Social Security, the future of Social Security, he said, quote, "We should absolutely, absolutely cut Social Security and raise the retirement age." This is a man who is totally out of touch, certainly when it comes to Wisconsin seniors. And, you know, I hear that. You said that statement is weird, even hearing it again. You know, it's absolutely weird to suggest that nursing home residents are on the verge of death and therefore they shouldn't be voting or shouldn't be allowed to vote.
Yeah, to say that
it's an absurd statement. It's a stupid statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and again, much like he made these comments multiple times in the past week, he can't say this was a one-time thing. He has said multiple times there's a need to cut Social Security and Medicare. He said it in a Wisconsin Eye interview back in 2012. He said it to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel editorial board back in 2012. And he uses, and this is a key thing for voters, I think, he uses one of those buzzwords that every voter should be aware of. When they talk about cutting entitlements rather than earned benefits, when you hear, Max, somebody talking about cutting entitlements, that it's a runaway driver of our national debt, when you hear the word entitlements from a candidate, what should we be thinking?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right. Social Security is not an entitlement. It's an earned benefit. Working people pay every paycheck they put in withholding into Social Security. It's an earned benefit. And, you know, this is it's kind of a subtle approach to undermining Social Security, to calling it an entitlement. You know, when people hear entitlement, what do they think of? Welfare. There isn't a whole lot of support for welfare in this country. There is overwhelming support for Social Security. And when you start to shift the perception of what Social Security is from an earned benefit, which it is, to entitlement, it's a way to undermine the program, to undermine the support for the program. And it's something pernicious. I hear it over and over again. And it's unfortunate that in your state, in Wisconsin, you're being subjected to it. To his point about nursing home residents and voting, if anything, we should be making it easier for people in nursing homes to vote. We should improve access to voting in nursing homes. The contrast between this candidate, Hovde, and your Senator Baldwin couldn't be more distinct. She's a champion of seniors in Wisconsin and around the country, which is why I came out to Madison. I don't know if you know this. I came out to Madison last month and endorsed her. I gave her a pair of big red boxing gloves to go back to Washington and keep fighting for seniors, just as she's done since she's been in Washington.
And can we, for a second, because again, a lot of the focus on this topic goes to seniors, and rightly so. But I want to get to some of the younger generations and why they should pay attention too, because, and again, we've played the audio previously, but Eric Hovde has again said multiple times that if he were elected senator, he would support making it harder for today's younger workers start to collect the benefits that they've paid into, that they've earned. You start about moving the retirement age, you know, a couple of years if you're in your 50s, a couple more years if you're in your 40s, and probably a few more years in your 20s, where the earliest you could get Social Security, Medicare for workers in their 20s would be 72 years old. Now, again, today's workers in their 20s aren't really thinking about age 72, but why should they, why should younger adults pay attention when a Senate candidate talks like this?
Well, he has, I think, complete disregard for the people that will depend on Social Security. And let me just tell the younger people in the audience, Social Security will be there for you when you do reach retirement age. But it's there for you right now. You know, a lot of people don't know this, but Social Security is insurance for families. If you are a 27-year-old worker right now, with a spouse and two children, you have almost $2 million in value of life and disability insurance in case something bad happens in the family. Social Security covers disability benefits, survivor benefits, spousal benefits. So it's an it's a program that's there for younger people right now. And to do anything to undermine this program is a disservice, not just to seniors, it is, but also to younger people.
For folks that have heard this and maybe want to learn more, should they simply be looking for the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare website, or are there other things that you think they should be doing to stay active on this issue?
Well, you know, yes, definitely. We have a terrific website, ncpssm.org. A lot of good information on that. But I would tell your voters, go to town hall meetings. Go to Mr. Hovde's town hall meetings. And if he says, oh, I'm for Social Security, that's not good enough. Ask him, well, what are you for cutting benefits? Are you for raising the retirement age? Are you for accurately and honestly calling this program an earned benefit? Don't just let him get away with, as often candidates seem to do these days, and they say to me, oh, I'm for Social Security, I'm for Medicare. That's not good enough. You should try when you're in the same room with him to get specific answers. Would he support a fair cost of living adjustment? You know, one of the beauties of Social Security is as a COLA supposed to keep up with inflation, mm-hmm. but it's not enough. It's not accurate. It doesn't follow inflation the way it impacts the seniors. Ask him, what would you do with the cost of living adjustment?
Exactly.
Get some real answers.
We do need those answers. And so I hope folks will take a look at that. Max Richmond from the Committee to Protect Social Security and Medicare. Thank you so much, Max. Nice to meet you. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel is next.
Send lawyers, guns, and money.
We are very fortunate at Civic Media across the network to have former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel join us on Saturday mornings live, 9 to 11, replayed on Sunday mornings for Amicus, a legal brief. Never a more important time than when you're making history, as will happen next week when a criminal trial begins for a former president of the United States. Jim Santel, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Pat, good to be with you once again, indeed. An historic time in our nation's history and our world history, arguably, too. And great to be with you this morning to chat all about that and more.
So when we talk about the trial, people say, well, what do you mean the trial is starting? What we're talking about is jury selection is going to get going on Monday. Let's start with the case first and then the process, because you can't blame people for not being able to keep all of the cases straight. So what is the crux of this case that Donald Trump will start to stand trial for on Monday?
Right. This was actually the first of four cases that were prosecuted, initiated by grand juries across the country. Those others, of course, in the District of Columbia, in Georgia, and in Florida. This one, the first one indicted, if you will, charged against the defendant, Donald Trump. And it goes way back to 2016. Always remember the time right before the 2016 election. And it comes out during the course of future proceedings after that election that right before the election, Donald Trump, through his attorney and so-called fixer, a woman named Michael Cohen, had offered to and provided to a woman named Stormy Daniels, another woman named Kara McDougal, $130,000 and $150,000, respectively, basically to be quiet. And he was offering those monies to them and gave those monies to them through Michael Cohen for the purpose of keeping them quiet.
Which, by the way, we got to jump in and say, it's not... That's the part that's not illegal. You can pay somebody hush money.
You can.
But the legal part comes with your business records.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. When you do that sort of thing, what you need to do under New York law, and that's how this is prosecuted, what you do then is you need to make certain that your financial records, including representations about legal representation by Michael Cohen, are accurate and true. Donald Trump, the crux of this once again is, he reports these as legal fees. Michael Cohen later, not immediately, but later comes forward and says, no, these were not legal fees. I was paying somebody off at the behest of Donald Trump to keep them quiet. And that's the crux of the violation of the law in New York. And I would simply add another important footnote, which is, although that sounds very lurid, if you will, from the sort of the interpersonal relationship standpoint, and even very technical from the perspective of a New York violation of a financial law, the reality is I always regard this as an election interference case. It's the first among the several. Why? Because what you're doing is you're trying to stop the American public from knowing something that is arguably relevant about your candidacy. That's also affecting the vote. And so it partakes of those things that are also pending in Georgia and in D.C. It's basically election interference at its core. And look for Alvin Bragg, the DA, to talk about just that theory when he presents this case in opening argument in about 2, maybe even 3 weeks from now.
So they're going to start with a jury pool of, it says here, several hundred people to get down to a jury of 12. So what happens Monday? What's the process? What are all these jurors going to be asked about?
Sure. So the Judge Juan Merchan, who is the presiding judge, much in the news these days, has issued basically a several-page letter, and he's also advised the attorneys, based upon consultation, that they've already engaged in the pretrial proceedings, about 42 different questions that they're going to be asking. The judge is going to be asking a pool of, yes, you're absolutely right, Pat, we think about 500 people are being summoned in, not in one day, not in one courtroom, but 500 people to find probably a jury of somewhere between 14, maybe 15 jurors altogether. So you've got alternatives during what will be about a 6-week trial altogether. And yes, indeed, the judge is going to ask some basic questions about background, about history, about employment, about family, those kinds of things. But also, significantly, the last few pages of the questionnaire also ask about if you've had any relatives, have you, your close friends, been involved in the Trump campaign? Have you ever attended a rally involving Donald Trump? Do you have currently followed Donald Trump on social media? Have you organized, attended, as I said, a campaign event for the Trump organization? Have you signed up for doing any of these things? Fascinating, too. Have you ever considered yourself a part of the QAnon movement, Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, the Three Percenters, the Boogaloo Boys, Antifa, all these things that are basically groups that have engaged in an insurrection? Many of the things about the specifics here. And finally, again, not many, many questions here, but also, do you have any strong opinions about Donald Trump, about the charges against him that would affect your ability to make a decision fairly and impartially in this case? 3 or 4 or 5 different questions about that, including things like, have you read his books? Do you follow him again in the media? All those kinds of things.
Do they ask if they've bought like any Trump steaks or went to Trump University?
The steaks, the shoes, the Bibles are not specifically mentioned.
Okay.
They're arguably implicit, Pat, in the questions about what is the nature of your relationship, even arm's length, with the Trump campaign and Donald Trump.
I would see that. Now, this is the part that's a little depressing, and I've said it since all of these various criminal things came up, is in my mind, it's already a win for justice for the American people that an ex-president is not above the law and can be charged. And I think that's my way of trying to be an optimist in what I'm about to say next. It only takes one juror, and a lot of the press has been reporting on all they need to get a mistrial is get one of these jurors to hold out, to go through the whole process saying, yep, I can be impartial, and then decide that they won't be. I mean, that is either the worst case scenario or a very likely scenario, depending on who you talk to. How do you feel about it?
Right. So this is true of, frankly, any criminal case involving a defendant. You do need to have unanimity. That's the point of your question, Pat, which is that all 12 jurors in the end have got to decide unanimously on a verdict. Now, that could be not guilty or that could be guilty. What you're also suggesting is you could have someone on the panel who says, I can't decide. I can't make a decision here. In that case, you've got what's called a hung jury. And there you've got what's called a mistrial. Then the judge would have to come back and say, listen, this jury just can't reach a verdict. And then we do this all over again, believe it or not, if that were to happen. But you're right. All it takes, frankly, is one person on the jury to accomplish either one of those kinds of things. And this is our system of justice. We all embrace it. It is what is in our Constitution, our federal Constitution, our state Constitution. But I often said that it is remarkable, if you think about it, that we get 12 people together who do not know each other, who do not know the law, nothing critical or critical about that, being criticizing them about that. And we ask them to decide something unanimously, 12 people. When's the last time, Pat, you and I have been in a group of 12 people where we all agree on something as important as this? And we do that because of the importance. And I want to make that point too, which is someone is on trial here. This is, in the end, human tragedy, right? All criminal prosecution is that someone is on trial here for criminal events. We need to have a very high standard, beyond a reasonable doubt, unanimity. That's our appropriate system in our rule of law regimen.
So just a couple of seconds here. I'm not going to ask you to predict the outcome. I'm just going to ask you from your point of view, as you look at what you believe the prosecution is going to present, do you think they are going to present a case that has a good chance of jury unanimity and reaching their burden of proof? Or are you looking at what they're about to present and going, I don't know if I would necessarily go ahead with that, and I've given you all of about 10 seconds to respond?
That's just fine. And the answer is yes, I think it's a strong case. I think it can be made. It depends a lot upon how the jurors view these witnesses, including Michael Cohen, Stormy Daniels, who themselves have lots and lots of baggage in this case.
This is going to be something. And we didn't even have time to talk about what predated this, which was the O.J. Simpson trial. We're going to talk about that with Mark Jacob next. Jim Santel, thanks so much. Amicus, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning on the Civic Media Radio Network. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Pat, good to be with you as always. See you next week.
All right. Mark Jacob coming up next. You're up north. I'm still digesting the news that Herbie Hancock turns 84 years old today. This was one of those Vanguard videos in the early days of MTV. Back now with Mark Jacob, our friend, former editor at the Chicago Tribune, who helps us break down some of the media coverage of the week's stories. But before we do, we're going to talk about O.J. Simpson and the trial. And Mark, I've purposefully held this back because I know I'm in the minority on this. So I, by all means, feel free to disagree with me. I said before the OJ trial, and I'll take it to my grave after the trial, that case more than anything said there should not be live TV cameras in a courtroom, because now it's no longer a courtroom that weighs evidence. It is a stage. And we saw the judge play to it. We saw all the lawyers play to it. Some of the witnesses played to it. And I know that most of my journalistic brethren would be, no. We need that. We need the transparency. I've always felt live TV cameras in the courtroom just add an element that takes away from justice. You go ahead and tell me why I'm wrong.
You are wrong, Pat. Okay. But clearly that's an egregious example. That's an example of goofy lawyers acting goofy. The judge was terrible. The judge, Judge Ito, knew he was on camera and acted like it, and it was awful. But I agreed. But I think transparency is important. I think we're this upcoming Trump trial and it would be, I would love to see the trials involving Donald Trump be televised. And I also feel like the fact that federal trials are not televised is a bad thing. I mean, those are some of the most important trials we have. Mm-hmm. And that the Supreme Court is not, we get an audio feed, but we don't get any video. I just think it's part of democracy. I think it's important. And I think I think everyone agreed that the Simpson case, trial was a disaster, and it was, know, my personal feelings about it is that he's almost certainly guilty. I mean, he said he was going to go find the real killers. Well, he didn't, because, you know, but I don't actually think that the case was so. I mean, he was guilty in my opinion, but I don't think he was proven guilty in the trial. I think that it was a bad trial, and the prosecution did a terrible job. And in some ways, that's American justice. That if the prosecution doesn't prove its case, then the defendant ought to be acquitted. And so, you know, that's kind of my feelings about it. But I do think that I'm sure TV would love it if every trial was televised. But, you know, they'd want it for, you know, for their commercial reasons. Right. But I do think for democracy, it's kind of important.
I feel like you always have reporters in the courtroom. You have journalists who will report honestly and frankly, don't outsource your work to a TV camera to say, no, you are the one that is going to look at this evidence and you're going to report back on it. I totally get the point. I can see the point in that I'm in the minority. But it gives me a chance to again look back at just how awful that was, and all the failures for so many reasons, the attorneys, the LAPD, you know, the judge, the way that TV networks handled themselves.
Bringing something as evidence in like the gloves that you didn't know whether it was going to.
Yes. What do we say in politics? Never take anything to the floor until you count the votes.
Exactly. You know? No, it was terrible. It was a terrible prosecution.
Hey, I'd love to say that since then, you know, press behavior has become so much better, but we all know how sarcastic I'm about to get here because, honest to goodness, Mark, this New York Times headline this week. Look, one of the people running for president, the current president, wants to protect abortion rights and restore them. One has been all over the place, but it was instrumental in striking down Roe v. Wade. And yet, the New York Times headline: two imperfect messengers take on abortion. Neither side of the abortion divide would probably design the exact candidate they have in 2024. Really, it says right there, neither side of the abortion divide. Right. We're both sizing abortion in a way that says these two are somehow equally bad messengers. That's insane.
Well, it goes back to, you know, to Biden's acceptance of the Hyde Amendment about federal funding for abortions. And, you know, and we all know that Joe Biden was basically kind of a centrist Democrat, you know, and still is, really. And so it takes that. Well, now, because women's rights to, you know, to control their own bodies have been, you know, removed, Biden has clearly become pro Roe versus Wade. And he was never against Roe versus Wade. I mean, it's goofy, but it's one of those things where the New York Times loves an opportunity to pretend that the candidates are equal because it makes them seem it's a safe space for them. It's one of those quick, let's find us a place where we don't look Republican or Democrat, you know, and it's just cowardly and stupid. And I don't know who it plays to. I mean, it's funny. I was fighting on Twitter with Jonathan Martin of Politico about this because
I was going to ask you about that next. I see this little back and forth here about criticizing the headline and Jonathan Martin going, I don't know why he was criticizing you for criticizing a headline.
Well, and the funny thing, he brought up Wisconsin. He said, well, you know, he brought up low information voters in Wisconsin, kind of dismissive of the voters, which is very elitist of him. But he said low information voters in the wild counties are sure paying attention to the headlines in the New York Times. Well, all right. Number one, headlines do matter because more people read headlines than anything else. And they may not subscribe to the New York Times, although some people in the wild counties do, but the whole news media follows the New York Times in a lot of ways. I mean, people mimic the New York Times, unfortunately, these days. The idea that headlines don't matter is it's just a stupid argument. And so he made it, and people kind of jumped on him, you know. And Greg Sargent, you know, formerly of Washington Post, but a really good voice in the debate on social media. He said that he just couldn't understand why somebody in the media was trying to say that what the media did didn't matter.
they just don't want to fill in that word instead of both sides, blah, blah, blah. If it's a Republican or a conservative that's doing something, they don't want to say it. And, that's what you and Stephen Beschloss talked about in your latest Media Misses video about something the Washington Post did.
Well, the problem with the Washington Post is that they did a big story about voter suppression and, in various states and how it's harder to vote in some states and easier to vote in others. And that was the headline. And so depending on where you live, it's harder to vote or it's easier to vote. Well, I mean, that's the headline was 11 words. And I found a 10 word one, which was much better, which was if you're in a Republican run state, it's harder to vote. And if it's in a Democratic run state, it's easier. They had pretended in their headline just to make it safe that it just depended where you lived. Well, it depends whether the state's run by a Republican or a Democrat. I mean, and the story was very clear on that point. I mean, the headline, it was clear, but it was clear in the seventh paragraph, Pat. It was one of those things where they want to have a soft lead and they want to have a soft headline, and then they want to sneak in the facts. So this idea that, well, it just kind of depends on where you live, whether it's easy to vote or not. No, it depends on who's making the rules, the Republicans or the Democrats.
Exactly. The way that Donald Trump tried to navigate through the Arizona Supreme Court ruling that upheld an 1864 abortion ban, trying to have it every which way. And yet, but at the same token, he again gives the, Democrats want abortion after birth, something that, again, if any other candidate, especially a Democrat, said something so patently false, we'd never hear the end of it. And somehow we or the media continues to let those things just run off like water off a duck's back when Trump says things that are so clearly false. They just try to pretend it wasn't even said.
Yeah, he keeps on saying that. He's been saying it for months. And it's post-birth abortion is what he calls it, mm-hmm. which is not a thing. There's just no fact to it. It's something that they just pulled out of their butt and they're just waving it around for months and months and months. And you're right that if any other politician did that, especially a Democratic politician, the mainstream media would write stories about that specifically. They would say, why does he keep on repeating this completely false thing? But it's the whole, well, that's just Trump being Trump. It's mm-hmm. He has worn them down. We all suffer for the fact that he has worn them down.
It just seems like, again, people want the access to Trump, or they want the appearance of, that they're not purposely trying to upset one side or the other, which leads me to ask you about you and others reacted to how the Gerald Ford Foundation, named for the former president, refused to give an award to Liz Cheney because apparently the board was afraid that if Trump got elected, he would revoke the foundation's tax exempt status, which sounds like a stretch to me, but still just the lack of, what we would call a profiling courage on something like that.
Yeah. Well, that is a shocking thing. And David Hume Kennerly, the photographer who was on the board, who revealed that they had refused to do that, and the reason why, gets a lot of credit for that. And this is what people who study authoritarianism view as compliance in advance, where just because you're afraid somebody is going to do something bad to you, you do exactly what they want you to do. So you pull your punches. You don't do what you know is right because you're worried that they're going to punish you for it. You don't know that they've punished you for it. They haven't punished you yet, but you have changed your behavior because you were afraid of the authoritarian. And people, Pat, I think people in the news media and in a lot of industries are already trying to put themselves in a safe space on Donald Trump if he becomes a dictator. And these words, Trump and dictator, come out of my mouth, and I think this is absurd. Why would America have a dictator? But Trump has said he wants to be a dictator. He's acting like a dictator. He's telling us how he wants to be a dictator. We just kind of wake up,
I feel like if we had a time machine and could visit with some of our founding fathers who had to have conversations like this with people that were their friends and neighbors, but were also monarchists,
yeah,
had to be so frustrating to them. And what would they think that we're back to having this kind of discussion in this country in this day and age? I would not have seen that coming. This is one just about word selection in a headline that you reposted, and I wanted to call attention to it as well, that a newspaper wrote this headline: consistent hiring spree not guaranteed to help Biden win re-election. And James Fallow says, well, what trend would guarantee an election result? There's no such thing. But again, the some of these newspaper headlines are working so hard to not give Biden any actual credit for, you know, the best economic recovery post-pandemic around the world.
Well, right. And they say all these kind of just silly things like economic prosperity not guaranteed to continue, or the future is uncertain on the economy. Well, Pat, maybe one time since the cavemen when the future of the economy has been certain. I mean, has it ever been certain? No. So a headline where you write, you know, we're doing great in the economy now, but the future's uncertain, is just an attempt to kind of throw shade on good news. And because I'm not sure that's always anti-Biden in this case, but I think it's more that newspaper people or news people like to consider themselves really savvy by not accepting good news and kind of throwing shade on it and pretending that bad news, that good news might be bad news.
But it reminds me of, you know, one of the troubling trends that I've seen now is that we've seen Wall Street hit record high after record high after record high. And it's the kind of thing where, again, in a Trump or practically any other Republican administration, I feel like we'd be hearing about it all the time, kind of like the way we did when Clinton was president. You know, we came to realize later on it was a dot-com bubble, but still there was a lot of reporting on it. You ask people where Wall Street is these days, and they're going to tell you it's not nearly as good as the numbers actually show.
Right. Well, remember, in the Trump administration, he was always talking about stuff like that. He was constantly saying, greatest economy of all time, greatest economy of all time. And, you know, in marketing, you learn repetition is really important. And so, you know, for people who actually believe in democracy, they need to keep on repeating their messages. They need to not just say, well, I said that 3 weeks ago, so why say it again? You need to keep on saying things like that.
Yes, and obviously we're not. I'm not putting this all on the Biden campaign. You know, reporters can certainly report on the economy, no matter what the Biden team is saying. But yeah, the Biden team should be doing some messaging as well. Mark Jacob, thanks as always. Have a great weekend.
See you later.
All right, Dan Schumacher is coming up next as we wrap up the week here. You're up north. Monday on the program, we are going to have Tom and Christy Manison. They are the co-authors of Secret Wisconsin, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. So we'll talk to them about their book coming up Monday morning here on Up North News Radio. Dan Schumacher joins us now, who, along with Greg Bach, helps spotlight this week's Grateful Dead Tune of the Week. What do we got there, guys?
Scarlet Begonias, if I think it is.
That's exactly right. Ding, ding, ding.
Hello, friends. Hello, friends.
Tell you what, look at this. We got a fan in Tony up in Hayward. Love seeing when Dan comes on. What you been up to this week?
You know, it's been a kind of a rough week. I'm wearing decked out in all Northland College. It's been a rough week trying to find a way to keep the school open. I've been living with accountants, lawyers. I think there's a song, Guns, Lawyers.
And we played it earlier, in fact. Yes, we played it this morning.
So, it's been a rough week. It's been an emotional week, I would say, for a lot of the students because they thought they'd know something a week ago. If most don't know, Northland's in financial troubles and kind of looking for a way to get some cover here from like a form of bankruptcy and so we can reorganize and reopen or open in the fall again. So it's been an emotional time, but this coming Friday, the final decisions by the board will be made and we'll go from there. And, you know, Pat, I might be back in Chippewa bugging you for every day for loose change. So
you have not, it's not like you've never had a conversation about having some kind of a talk show yourself that would have a lot of a foundation in sports.
I have, Pat. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. I've thought about it every different way. I think radio is, you know, I was on the radio for 4 years in college. Mm-hmm. KQL 95.8. Winona, Minnesota. You know,
so Grateful Dead channel by chance, or
I could do that too. I can do a XM radio or something like that.
The Grateful Dan,
sports talk.
The Grateful Dan, I like that. Very good, very good. Yeah, it could happen, but let's not get ahead of ourselves, and
let's talk about the Masters.
Wish you guys all the best. This is Masters weekend, so
it is. And did you watch the? They had to close it for darkness last night, but I'll tell you what, Tiger Woods was coming on.
He was, I don't have it in front of me. Was he just a couple of shots off the lead?
Yeah, he's minus two, and I think the leader's minus five.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, he looked strong. He didn't look like he was limping as bad as he has in the past. Mm-hmm. So I know Freddie Couples played with him 2 days in a row and complimented, like, he's hitting it better than he ever has. So I'm a Tiger fan. I don't like a lot of things he's done. But I've enjoyed watching him play, and his competitiveness is just off the charts. It's like watching Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Well, it's, he's played Augusta National many times. Oh, yeah. And so he's very familiar with that course. He gets in trouble when he's playing on something that he hasn't played before. He gets in trouble on other courses, intercourse, other things. But the course at Augusta National, he understands. He's been there plenty of times. He does.
But, you know, also that course is unusual for anybody playing golf because of the toll it takes you on the body.
Right.
There's not a level lie at the whole place. Everything is a hill, uphill, downhill. It's a tough 18 holes to walk. And a guy who's got a bad leg who probably can't even feel his foot, you know, I compliment him. Anybody that comes back from something like that is pretty amazing. But What about the Cubs and the Brewers, huh?
What about them? I mean, you got the –
They're both hitting the heck out of the ball.
I know.
They are. And Yelich, holy cow.
I know. He said, it's like you said, I know Jackson Chourio is going to be the next big thing, but, you know, and I'm not done yet.
Yeah. I like that. I like
when they add to that. Mm-hmm. One of my baseball player, my top pitcher for Northland College, threw a complete game shutout this past weekend.
Nice.
So even in the feeling of despair on campus, something like that comes out of that. It really, everybody had a good chuckle and had a good feel about it. So, it's a tough situation, but the kids are making the best out of it.
I've enjoyed watching how the Brewers have come pretty strong out of the gate. They were rained out yesterday, so that game will be made up at the end of August. They're now in Baltimore for a three-game series starting tonight, and then they're back home Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday against San Diego, and then they go back on the road for division games against the Cardinals and the Pirates.
Did they finish last night?
They did. No, they were postponed.
They're postponed. That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yep. They did the night before. They started like 2 hours late, and they did get the whole game in.
That's it. That's what I was thinking.
But it's Thursdays that was rained out. But I want to say that again. I'm happy the Brewers have come out of the gate strong, but I still and I will get over it, of course, just like we did with Josh Hader. But when I hear, like, you know, Corbin Burns had this great opening game, you know, now that he's with Baltimore, and I know you've seen other, you know, when Cubs players go somewhere, and it just feels weird for a while to watch some of your stars going someplace else. But
nothing. The game in football now, everybody's moving around. Everything, it's about the almighty dollar.
Uh huh.
So
I never thought the words transfer portal would become a real thing that we talk about all the time. Now, like, everything is in the transfer portal. But
it is. Every one of my athletes, because of the fear of closing, is in the transfer portal. So there's 220 kids that are looking for new homes. So it's between NIL. And if you watch some of the quotes by Nick Saban lately, heck, Tom Izzo yesterday expanded on it. This transfer portal and the NIL is changed the whole makeup of college athletics.
Oh, yeah.
And the teams that have the most money now can buy the best players. They can enter into the transfer portal and get paid more and go to another school like they're doing business. They didn't like what they're getting paid here, so they're going to go over here to get paid. Mm-hmm. It's just ruined any kind of, I don't know, the tip, the building familiarity. It would be hard to build a team.
Yes.
When you have so much transition.
Yep. The Milwaukee Bucks, they are in Oklahoma City tonight. You can catch that game starting at 6:30 on locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, Lake Erin Amory. Then they wrap up the regular season Sunday afternoon in Orlando against the Magic. And then talk about complicating things to explain. Never mind the transfer portal. We're going to once again have to try to explain the NBA playoff play-in tournament.
Yeah, I don't get that. You know, is there no time to sign Caitlin Collins to go?
Hey, maybe. You know? Hadn't thought of it that way before. We just might.
All have right, I got one for you.
Real quick.
I know you remember days like, where were you when Kennedy got shot, and were you when the space shuttle blew up, things like that, as us old people know.
Yep.
Where were you when OJ got convicted?
I don't know where I was when he got convicted. I think I was working at Wax Radio in Eau Claire at the time. I told the story
didn't
earlier.
Did he
about
not
the,
get convicted?
The not get convicted.
I'm sorry. My bad.
I told the story of the slow speed chase and how the dinner I was at the banquet room like emptied out to go into the bar and watch it. It was just, again, we're telling OJ stories today, but hopefully we just get back to a normal life because OJ did enough damage already. Yeah. Thank you, Dan Schumacher. Have a great weekend.
Adios, amigos.
Thank you, Greg. Have a fun weekend. LaughingTap.com.
Thank you.
Go there. See Greg. Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. See you Monday.